Good afternoon, and welcome to another Monday Memos from Concordia Seminary. Today we're going to introduce to our radio audience someone who is not involved with the teaching at Concordia Seminary, but who nevertheless plays a very important role in the entire operation of the seminary. In our studio today is the Reverend E.J. Otto, chairman of the seminary's Board of Control. Pastor Otto, you call Quincy, Illinois, home. Is that correct?
Well, at least for the last 35 years, really home for me is Omaha, Nebraska, where I grew up in a parsonage, and then, of course, off to school. And since seminary graduation, Quincy is home.
For 35 years, no less. At Quincy, which is about 130 miles from St. Louis, you are a pastor of Our Redeemer Lutheran Church. How big a congregation is Our Redeemer, and what type of people constitute the congregation? Professional people? Farmers? Give us a little bit of a description.
Well, really, rather humdrum, I suppose. Nothing dramatic about the parish. Its makeup, I suppose, would be the sort of thing you'd expect in a city of 50,000. We have three of our Missouri Synod Lutheran churches there. And these are, in all three parishes, including mine, a crosscut of people. We all have a few professional people, a few farmers from the surrounding area, and factory people, a few school teachers, just the normal run. If there's anything a little unusual, it turned up recently, and I hadn't really been aware of this, but the Lutheran Medical Missions Group here in St. Louis, I think canvassed the synod, all parishes, as to the medical people in the parish.
Mm-hmm.
And in our congregation of, say, 500 communicants, turned out that we had 17 people involved in the medical profession, which seems a little high to me.
Yeah, that does. Huh. Well, in other words, you've served the same congregation for 35 years since your graduation from our seminary in 1939.
Yes, I went directly from here to Quincy. At that time, we had two parishes in Quincy, and the city was moving towards the east, that is, away from the river, and one of the two existing parishes, and both of them are antedate even the formation of Synod.
Hmm.
But one of them formed a branch Sunday school, which met in the basement of a dairy, of all things, and that had been running along, limping along, really, for a few years, and at my graduation I was sent there to either make or break it, and in 1940 we organized the parish with, I think, a start of 47 communicant members, and I've been with them ever since. So we have a standing joke in the area. When people ask them, as laymen do forth and back, how's your pastor, they say Pastor Otto's the best pastor we've ever had, but they don't say he's the only one. And of course, when pastors ask me about my parish, I say the same thing. It's the best parish I ever had.
I guess you can very correctly say that. I suppose this means that you have now probably baptized, confirmed, and married two generations in the same congregation.
If you want to start feeling old, you realize that when you have a young couple in front of you, that this girl or boy, as the case may be, you baptize, and then you go still further, and you confirm them, and the wheel's gone around twice on this business,
mm-hmm,
of baptizing, confirming, and marrying. But when you really feel old, maybe I shouldn't say feel old, but when it gets to you, being in a congregation this long, when you have the funerals of some of these old-timers, this past Saturday afternoon, buried probably one of the finest Christians I've ever known, happened to be a farmer right on the edge of Quincy. The man had been a member of our parish for 32 years, held almost every office, always there when you needed him, and I don't choke up easy, but it's not easy to preach those sermons.
Yeah, I believe that. I happen to know, Pastor Otto, that you have also held various offices in the district in which you serve, namely the Central Illinois District. You served as second vice president for 2 years and as first vice president from 1970 to 73. In addition, you served for 17 years, I believe, as editor of the Lutheran Witness Supplement of the Central Illinois District. And as though that weren't enough, I believe you are also very much involved with, shall I say, civic affairs. And Quincy, how about telling us a little bit about that?
Well, I'll try to do this in all modesty, which is a little hard to do when you're talking about yourself. But back to the district, of course, when you're in the same district that many years, you're bound, if you're anywhere near normal, to be loaded, and taking that term in its evangelical sense,
mm-hmm.
With various jobs. The second vice presidency came as a result of a man's illness that we had a special election. And then, of course, if you behave yourself in the second vice presidency, in the course of normal human events, you become first vice president. And, of course, then from first vice president, you usually move up to president. And I got out of there just in time.
I guess you did.
By accepting the membership on the Board of Control. That's as far as the district's concerned. As far as Quincy is concerned, of course, once more, you're not talking a big metropolitan area. You're talking about a kind of a friendly country town of about 50,000 people. And the hard thing, really, is to sort out, of all of the things you could do in a town like that, those things that really are worth the time.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be a fairly good steward of the time God gives me. I remember the Lord has called me to be a parish pastor, and that's my first responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember there's a Bible passage that says also that we should seek the peace of the city wherever we are. And I think within limits, a pastor ought to do what he can for his community. Now, I think there's all kinds of little Mickey Mouse things that some pastors get involved in, and I hope they won't think of me too badly for saying this, but I wonder about some of the boards and committees that pastors serve on, whether they're really related to what I call Christian service. So I've tried to sort them out, and pretty rigidly, two things, I guess over all of these years, stand out in my mind. One deals in mental health. We had nothing years ago, and I'm sure many communities didn't. Somebody had some emotional problems, mental problems. Away they went to the state hospital, in our case 70 miles away over to Jacksonville, Illinois, where many of them simply sat around custodial care back in those days. And a few of us in Quincy said, you know, some of these people that are going to Jacksonville, where they just stayed and vegetated sometimes for 30 and 40 years, that some of these people could be rescued, as it were, before they got there if we had some local mental health help and
mm-hmm.
counseling services.
Right.
Now today, of course, Gladys, we take all of these things for granted.
Yeah.
The communities have these, but I'm going back, like, say, 25, 30 years, and other towns didn't have it, and we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so a few of us there in town, we kind of found each other, as it were, and a motley crew we were. But we kept talking about this, that if we could get some good counseling service, and perhaps even psychiatric service in Quincy,
mm-hmm.
maybe we could keep these people out of the state hospital. And we'd hold a meeting someplace, and then somewhere else, and still somewhere else, and we'd move around, and really, I'm kind of proud of this, that the meeting finally, where we decided to apply to the state of Illinois for a charter as a county, Adams County Mental Health Society,
mm-hmm.
The decision to form that organization and apply for the charter was done in one of the rooms at my church.
Well, isn't that interesting?
And I am a charter member of the Adams County
mm-hmm.
Mental Health Society. As my friends tell me, nobody deserves its help more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hold you up, but one other thing on civic work. Once more, in human relations, and you know, the women can hold jobs now like men and minority races, but we still got a long way to go. And I am a member of the so-called Quincy Commission on Equal Opportunity. In our town, we have only one official city commission that deals with job opportunities, questions of discrimination, and the like. And it kind of makes me feel good to remember that I'm a charter member of that group.
Yeah, I should say so. Well, we'll have to keep moving here, Pastor Otto. We still have lots to talk about. But all I can say is you must be a very well-organized man to keep up with all these activities, or else have a top-notch secretary, or both. Speaking about secretaries, how about telling us a little bit about that?
Well, now, in your question, if I heard you right, you gave me two choices. Either I'm well-organized, or I've got a good secretary.
Or both.
Or both, and I'll add a third, and that is a wife. And the wife happens to double as secretary. And whatever organization I have, and goodness knows, it's not very much, really. I just kind of cast about like a headless chicken from place to place. But whatever organization I've got is due to Mrs. Otto, who types unbelievably fast, and also tries to remember where I'm supposed to be when, and kind of points me in that direction, and tells me, to put it nicely, where to go, and then I do.
Very good. Now to get back to our original introduction, you are with us today as chairman of the Board of Control of Concordia Seminary, and there are a lot of questions we'd like to ask about that board. First of all, how long have you been a member of the board, and how long have you been chairman?
Really for the same length of time. That is, since the 1973 New Orleans Convention. I was elected to the board at that convention in July 73. August 73, we held our first meeting, and of course, at that time, you must organize and elect your officers, chairman, vice chairman, secretary, and treasurer. Mm-hmm. And I was elected chairman at the August meeting.
I see. The board consists of 11 men, I believe. Who are these men? Are they pastors, laymen? How about telling us a little bit about them?
Yes, there are 11 men on the Concordia Seminary Board of Control. The boards of control of all schools do not always have the same amount. It depends on their size and so on. But we have 11, and they are divided this way. There are 5 pastors and 5 laymen and 1 teacher. Now, that division is changed slightly by New Orleans and will go into effect in the elections at Anaheim. Namely, there are to be 2 teacher positions. So henceforth, it will be 5 pastors, 4 laymen, and 2 teachers.
And are they from all over the country, or are they local people?
Well, some are from the local area. The 1853 charter of Concordia Seminary provides that a certain number, I believe 2, must be from St. Louis County.
Is that right?
But otherwise than that, they're a wide span.
Uh-huh.
For instance, we have a layman from near Chicago, a layman from Cleveland, a pastor from Florida. I'm from Quincy. We have a couple of laymen from right here, and a couple of pastors right from this area. So it's a pretty good spread.
Mm-hmm. Now, you alluded to this earlier, but how does one become a member of this board?
Well, nothing is ever simple, Gladys. We have 11 men on the board. 9 are by election, by synod at its convention, conventions, and 2 by position. Now, what I mean by the 2 is that for all of our schools, this rule applies that the president of the district in which the school is located is automatically on the board of control. In our case, then, the president of the Missouri district is a member of the board by virtue of being president of the district. And then there is another position, that a representative of the synodical president. So the synodical president appoints one of his vice presidents to represent him on the board. So you have 9 elected, 2 appointed, or positions.
Does the representative of the synodical president have to be one of the vice presidents, or could it be anyone?
I really can't answer that question. It happens to be the first vice president, and he's been on it for quite a number of years. So I don't know.
I see. Okay, how often does the board meet?
I suppose the answer to that is as often as it has to. And it has had to meet pretty often due to some problems we've had, as you're well aware. Actually, synodical rules say that the Board of Control, and that is the Board of Control of any of Synod's 16 schools, must meet a minimum of 3 times a year.
That would be real simple if that's all you would need.
I don't know whether any Board of Control ever gets down to that minimum.
I think most
of them probably meet, I would guess, and I'm simply guessing, anywhere from 7, 8, 9, 10 times. We have been meeting monthly, as you know, and for a while we even had to meet in special meetings a time or two. But we're down now to monthly meetings, and by God's grace, as the school continues to go forward, there'll be less and less need for long meetings. The time of meetings is shortened down, too, so things are looking up.
I'm sure you won't mind that. What is the function of the Board of Control? Is it an advisory group? In other words, do you men come here once a month or less frequently to hear what's going on at the seminary? Or is it a legislative body? Does the board make all the decisions concerning the seminary?
Well, you give me a hard choice between advisory and, you said, I think, just to hear what's going on at the seminary, which sounds like a chit-chat sort of thing.
It does.
And the alternative was a legislative group, which sounds like we make all of the decisions. And I think the truth lies halfway between. I don't think we're either really advisory or legislative. And by that, I mean this. We do come down to hear from our academic people, the executive officer, that is the president or acting president of the school, and the department heads, what they have been doing, things we have directed them to do, and they report back then what they have done. And so we do listen. But at the same time, we are a supervisory board, and the implementation of the policies of Synod with regard to the school are in our hands, and we are to see to that. But we do not invent the policies, so we are not truly legislative. Synod is legislative. Is that clear?
Yes, that makes good sense. Well, then, what is the relation between the Board of Control and, say, the entire faculty or faculty members? And where does the president of the seminary fit in this whole picture?
Well, the seminary president, I suppose, maybe I'm simplifying it a little bit, but I wouldn't make any distinction between a faculty member and the president of the seminary, because the president is a member of the faculty. So whatever you say about faculty, you're saying about him, too. Maybe the simplest thing, and I knew you were going to ask this, so I brought my little handbook along. And if you're ready for just a little tough language, I'll read in general what any board of control, not just the one here at St. Louis, but all boards of control throughout Synod, what they are to do and how they are to function. It says, the Synod administers each educational institution of the Synod through a board of control, which is to provide effective local administrative organization to facilitate the achievement of the purposes for which the Synod operates and maintains the respective institution, and to foster and safeguard its religious, academic, and financial interests in it. Now, to translate that simply, it means that Synod owns the school and Synod runs the school, but what is here called local administrative organization. In other words, who runs it on a day-by-day business, on a day-by-day basis between conventions? And the answer is the Board of Control does. So the Board of Control is exactly that, on behalf of Synod, not on behalf of itself, but as a steward, on behalf of Synod, it supervises the school, and of course the faculty is a part of it, and the president is a part of it, and it is the Board of Control's duty to supervise the faculty.
I see. Well, that all makes real good sense.
By saying supervise, you understand that's in a broad sense of the word.
Well, then let me ask you the next question. Is the Board of Control responsible to anyone, or is it an entity unto itself? I think in part you've answered that.
Well, it probably deserves going into a little bit. Maybe this will sound rather academic, and people say, well, so what? But really, it's very important that we keep the lines of control, the chain of command clear. Now, you and I know that Synod's constitution and bylaws have been belittled and People have said, oh, my, disregard, we've got emergencies and disregard the handbook mm-hmm. and forget the regulations and operate by love. Well, love is always within borders. There's a difference between liberty and license.
Mm-hmm.
And love and liberty, they operate within a certain sphere. And so we have to have regulations. I don't know any nice word for it. People bristle at the word regulation. But you've got to know who does what, and Senate is very clear. And so I think your question was, is the Board of Control responsible to anyone? And it most certainly is. And if you'll bear with me just a little bit, it runs like this. Senate itself owns the school, operates the school. In our case, puts about $1 million a year into that school. And mm-hmm. so Senate very rightly says, the schools are ours, and we say how it is run. So at the top of the bunch of bananas, I suppose, mm-hmm. the top banana is Senate. Then Senate elects a board for higher education. That board of higher education, so to speak, sits on top of all of these 16 schools. There are broad policies that apply to all schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Board for Higher Education sees to it that the synodically adopted policies are applied to and are carried out in all 16 schools, and we're one of them. Then you get down to us. And so that is really the chain of command from Synod to the Board for mm-hmm. Higher Education to our Board of Control.
Mm-hmm.
And we're responsible in that order.
Mm-hmm. One other question, and perhaps we're running out of time, and it may well be the final one. But can you somehow sum up, Pastor Otto, what the goals of the Board of Control of our seminary are?
Well, that question, of course, ties into what I've just said.
Mm-hmm.
Synod elects us and tells us very explicitly in its handbook what we can do and cannot do. In other words, this is a form of stewardship. And as mousy as this sounds, I remember the Bible verse which says, it is required in a steward that a man be found faithful. We are simply caretakers of this beautiful and precious piece of property that we call Concordia Seminary. Now, as stewards, we do not own it. We administer it on behalf of Synod. Mm-hmm. Good stewardship, as Scripture itself says, means periodically giving an account of your stewardship. Now, you would probably say, all right, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
We do that to Synod every 2 years. The synodical regulations require this, that we must report back to Synod. For example, we have a convention coming up, the Synodical Convention at Anaheim this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And our board has been very busy preparing a detailed and very accurate and fair report of the admittedly unusual 2 years that we've just gone through. But that report will be submitted as part of our stewardship to Synod in convention. We say, here is what we did. Here, by the grace of God, is what has been achieved. And wherever we have failed, we ask your forgiveness. And but for better or for worse, here's what we did. We give an account mm-hmm. of our stewardship.
Very good. Do you have any final comment to make, either as far as the seminary is concerned or anything else that you wish to talk about briefly in the moment or so that we have left?
Maybe one final thing. You were talking about the goals. I said our goal was to be a good steward. But this is a great time for this school. I don't have to belabor the sad things that happened to us. But my, we have a wonderful faculty, and we have a fine, dedicated student body that are going to make the church some fine pastors and men in the various types of ministry. And it's just a great time to be alive. I have come to the point now that I look forward to coming to St. Louis to these board meetings because everything is going great, and it's all by the grace of God, and so we say to God alone be all glory.
Well, I want you to know, Pastor Otto, that we, too, look forward to having you come on campus at least once a month and oftener. Thank you so very, very much for taking time out from your really busy schedule to be with us today.